ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Marvel Knowledgeable Riley.
I'm here. I'm excited.
Oh, yeah?
As usual, this is my favorite topic that we always talk about.
That's right. We're going to be diving deep, real deep, into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, so stick around. The Filmlosophers are presented in full heroic regalia by Mingle Media TV and recorded live each week at VGB Studios. You can access every episode of our complete multi-phase library on Audio Boom, iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Google Play, or Stitcher anytime. Once you're all caught up, new episodes debut each Wednesday. When worlds collide, let us know what you think on social media. Like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Last but not least, you can access all of our previous episodes at vgbstudios.com alongside other amazing podcasts like Video Game Bang and Me, Mike Self, and I. We got a great show in store for you. This is, like Chad said, this is a topic that he enjoys talking about all the time, year round, not just when trailers are breaking, not just when things are coming out, but this is a all the time type of discussion that he enjoys. And yeah, this is kind of going to be your conversation.
Come on, this is not isn't just my show.
No, I'm going to enjoy it, but I know it's interesting because in shows like this, I like to kind of let you take the floor most of the time because it's more of a learning opportunity for me because your brain just knows so much and is packed with so much Marvel knowledge. I actually was talking to another podcaster and telling him that I'd love to, like, just like how Thor was put into a gladiator arena, I'd love to pit our Marvel champion against their Marvel champion.
Oh, boy. I don't know. I'm...
She said she might have been happy to oblige, so you never know.
We'll see.
We might have
I might be setting myself up for embarrassment, or you might be setting me up for embarrassment.
No, not at all. That's right. We're going to be talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe and all that entails. Like we said, this is Chad's kind of thing to talk about, and this is really where he shines the most here, in my opinion. I love hearing you talk about Marvel, so this is one of those things.
It's true. I mean, this is my shield helicarrier.
It is.
A giant floating aircraft carrier in the sky, full of heroes.
It's true. We're going to actually take some time now that the new Infinity War trailer is going to debut. It actually debuts this morning when you're hearing this show. So it should have already debuted, and you've had a chance to see it. But we kind of wanted to look back on the timeline and see in terms of the impact that the films have made in film, you know.
Yeah, they've been around for a decade.
At least.
By the time Infinity War comes around in May, they will have been around for a decade.
Really?
As a multi-franchise universe.
Yeah, it's true.
So in that first decade, we've seen really a lot of wins, a lot of success, a few, you know, toe stubbing moments, which is going to happen. You take risks and sometimes you stick the landing and sometimes you don't. But yeah, there's a lot to talk about. Obviously, as you mentioned, by the time listeners are hearing this podcast, the first full teaser trailer for Infinity War will have dropped online. We are recording the show before that happens.
Yes.
Because we're just that good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, we may even predict what will happen tomorrow. And, you know, we may actually be right and start throwing our podcast into the realm of, you know, psychic fortune telling and say, hey, you know what? Let us tell you what's going to happen tomorrow. Probably
yeah,
not.
I don't know about that. I mean, also known as we don't own the studio that we record in, so we have to record when we have to record.
It's true. Or we can just start recording on our phones and you can get like all the ambient noise and the...
Which would be weird.
That would be really weird.
It would be weird.
But like we said, we're going to talk about the MCU. And honestly, this is a franchise that kind of set the bar for everything that was to come. We've had superhero movies prior to this. We've had movies that have, you know, took people by surprise in finding out that they're actually superhero films. They're a part of a larger comic book franchise, such as Blade. Nobody really knew that Blade was a superhero, comic book superhero, or
Marvel specifically.
Marvel specifically, that's right. Or Spawn, or even, I mean...
Not Marvel.
No. But then you have people like Batman, and there were Superman movies, but they weren't really tied to a specific cinematic universe. And then you had the debut of Iron Man, the very first Iron Man, back in 2008, and that kind of just changed the whole way people perceived movie franchises.
Well, let's be very specific. Iron Man's end scene with Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury, that was really the moment. I mean, there had been, you know, rumors and rumblings, but a number of comic book intellectual properties, IPs, had been integrated into film in different ways through multiple studios. And Iron Man was, what, Paramount?
Yes.
I think was the distributor for Iron Man. So it was hinted at and rumored before the movie came out. But really, it's that scene where Nick Fury shows up in Tony Stark's, like, Malibu dream house place and basically name drops the Avengers. And then you're like, oh, okay, well, we know that different people have been screen tested and possibly hired for these other franchises of their own. But this was the first kind of confirming moment that at some point in the future, they are going to combine into the same movie. They're all going to share the universe.
Yeah.
Which happens in comic books all the time, doesn't really, aside from, you know, an Easter egg here and a wink there, it hadn't really happened in movies.
Or if you're talking about Thor's appearance in the 1980s version of The Incredible Hulk or things like that, having crossovers. But this also did another really impactful thing in my mind, and it brought people out of the comfort zone of already knowing, like, popular superheroes, already knowing, like, oh, everybody knows Batman, everybody knows Superman, everybody knows Spider-Man, but what about the bigger universe that those characters fall from? And you take somebody like Iron Man, which has it had a decent awareness within the crowds that went to go see it. I mean, other than the song that people were aware of, you know, do, 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 you know, all that kind of stuff.
That was a pretty good impression.
Thank you. I do, you know, impressions on the weekend. But this was the type of movie that people came to see and didn't fully understand. So what happened was that it pushed people to go and buy comics. It pushed people to go and research and go and find out, like, well, who the heck was that guy? Well, what was that? Well, why was he dressed like this? Why did he look like that? Who is this guy? What's he talking about next time when he's looking at this, you know, metal-looking type Iron Man suit? You know, who is he in the movies? And then the big reveal at the end with, you know, the Avengers initiative. I'm going to be pretty blunt and honest. I wasn't too aware of the Avengers initiative because I wasn't really that well deep into that format of Marvel. I was more interested in the smaller, you know, littler comics, like here and there Spider-Man, here and there X-Men. But to hear things like the Avengers initiative, it pushed me to be like, okay, I need to be a little bit more proactive in understanding what this franchise is going to be unveiling to me. So I went and jumped to my local comic book store or, you know, the internet and whatnot and began researching things. And this is one of those things that this film did, is it pushed people to go and further their knowledge of what is going to entail or pretty much unveil itself as the films continue.
Which is really funny because Iron Man as your first, like, banner marquee character is not necessarily a slam dunk, you know, conceptually. Obviously, they benefited tremendously from Robert Downey Jr.'s performance, his charisma, what that movie represented in his overall career trajectory. I mean, really, it was his Renaissance moment. So, you know, that was all totally aside from the character, the storylines in the comics, how that character integrates with other ones. We've talked about before in other episodes of the show, he's not necessarily always a very likable character. He's a womanizer, he's drunk half the time, and he makes poor life choices. Mm-hmm. So having him as your standard bearer of this new, you know, interconnected universe would not necessarily be a no-brainer. It looks right now, looking backwards, it looks like a no-brainer. And obviously they've decided to not do some of the things with that character that they could have done, given, you know, the source material.
Yeah.
And to their credit, I think that was those were good decisions to keep some of those story elements to a minimum or completely out of this version of the character, because it would be distracting. You've only got 2 hours at a time.
Yeah.
You know, 2 hours a pop with these movies. Granted, some of them go beyond that, but most of those are, you know, not the standalone characters. They're the group properties, the Avengers or Guardians of the Galaxy, that have numerous high profile characters to talk about or to feature.
Yeah.
So Iron Man wasn't necessarily a super no-brainer, but you know, the way that they executed on that idea, it sure looks like it today.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically what it led us into, you know, in that interconnected universe with, obviously you had, you know, the Incredible Hulk, the Edward Norton film, mm-hmm. that had the stinger with Tony Stark,
yeah.
in it, in the bar, which, who played the Hulk changed eventually.
Yeah.
And sort of a lot of the story elements were kind of brushed under the rug. Like, let's not so much focus on everything that happened in that movie, even though it's technically a part of Phase One.
Yeah.
It is the version of the Hulk, even though the graphics changed, the performer changed, et cetera. And it wasn't the first time. It was the first time. It wasn't the last time we saw that. We also had it with Rhodey, you know, the performer changed, you know, for James Rhodes from Terrence Howard to Don Cheadle, between Iron Man 1 and Iron Man 2.
And another thing too, just to, and I guess these both Iron Man and the Incredible Hulk films, which both debuted in 2008, one of the things that really blossomed as a result of both of these films was the mid-credit or end-credit scenes, which before were just novel things. It wasn't really anything fun. I mean, or anything important. You know, you had the Ferris Bueller.
I was going to say Ferris Bueller is kind of the only really memorable yeah. one.
But it wasn't really a common thing in most films. And so you take Iron Man, which has a pivotal scene at the end of the film that, you know, hints at what could be. And then, like you were saying, at the end of The Incredible Hulk, which has that scene with Robert Downey Jr. coming back as Tony Stark and talking more about the Avengers initiative, that kind of set the pace for what people were to expect when it came to superhero films. I mean, now you cannot go to a theater and watch a superhero film. And I use the term in general, superhero, because both properties are doing this. Any property that's a superhero film has an end credit scene or a mid credit scene.
Sure.
And it's become a staple for these types of
movies.
Yeah,
it's a thing.
Yeah. So I think that was, in terms of impact for just cinema altogether, anytime you have a film that looks like it's going to be a part of a larger thing, the mid credit or end credit scene is necessary.
Well, it's the whole idea of the cliffhanger, right? Where
the
end credit scenes in these films, they don't necessarily need to be cliffhangers, but they need to whet your appetite. At least one of them, because now there are multiple.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the mid credits, and then you have the end credits, and then if you're Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, you've got all kinds of little Easter eggs through the credits entirely. You know, and multiple sequences. So, you know, you've got it's a very multifaceted. It's a great tool. You know, we recently obviously saw Thor Ragnarok, mm-hmm. and that has essentially a foreboding, story-building, cliffhanger-type mid-credit scene.
Yeah.
And then the end credit scene with the Grandmaster is just there for fun.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just there for extra flavor, extra Goldblum.
It really was a good scene, and it was funny. And that type of element adds a little bit more of, like, of the excitement and anticipation even after the final scene of the main film. Because most people, as soon as the film ends, people get up and they walk out or whatever. But people, you tend to be able to decipher who is a true fan of a franchise and who's just there to just watch another film, because they're usually the ones who are still sticking around once the credits roll.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, you use it to, similar to how Iron Man ended, you know, you've got that connective tissue that they interweave in between. Thor: The Dark World, the mid-credit scene there introduced the Collector. They take the ether to the Collector, who wasn't going to show up until the next film in the overall universe, which was Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one. Doctor Strange, you have the end credits or the mid-credit scene with Thor. And then you have essentially the larger version of that interaction is in Thor Ragnarok. So you're building the connective tissue in these, you know, small little bite-sized chunks.
Yeah.
That's just enough to get people interested and excited, but, like, essentially salivating for the payoff later.
You being a true Marvel fan and really digging deep into every time you see these movies, we were talking about how Iron Man, the first Iron Man, and the Incredible Hulk, and Iron Man 2, and they were a different production studio. They were a different company altogether, with Paramount doing the first and second Iron Man, as well as Thor and Captain America: The First Avenger, and Universal doing the Incredible Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
All that led to Marvel's The Avengers, which debuted in 2012, which that actually began the start of the Marvel-Disney, you know, cohabitation in terms of production studio and whatnot.
The Mouse House bought them for $4 billion.
Do you, as a fan, do you, as a very, very, you know, scrutinizing type of fan, did you recognize any difference in terms of how some of these characters were portrayed from one production studio to going to the House of Mouse, like you said? Because you've already been introduced to Iron Man and Thor and Captain America and one version of the Incredible Hulk, as well as smaller characters here and there. Was there a halting difference that transitioned somewhere and whatnot when it came to moving with Marvel/Disney?
You know, I don't know that stories progress and characters change. Mm-hmm. If they don't, they lose their value. Like, they're no longer as interesting as they should be. So I think that from a certain point of view, yes, the characters did change, mm-hmm. you know, one movie to the next. Do I think that the overall tone of the universe shifted? No, not really. Mm. I mean, they got more money. I mean, and not even they got more money. They did get more money. They got access to more money, but they were already using, I mean, like, Iron Man utilized Industrial Light and Magic for mm-hmm. its effects, even as a pseudo-independent film, if you will.
Yeah.
It wasn't an independent film, but as far as superhero films are concerned, the structuring of the finances behind the scenes and how that, you know, it bore more than a passing resemblance to the way that you handle an independent production.
Yeah.
But they still used, like, the world-class partners, vendors, if you will, to accomplish, you know, their goal with the film. And it looked spectacular. It looked amazing.
Hmm.
Some of the original Iron Man film stuff is still some of my favorite Iron Man stuff on screen. Just the way that they pulled it off was remarkable. The showdown with the tank and all of that, you know. Or the jets, and stopping and they pass him and, you know, all that kind of stuff, just to build even the physics of what a superhero can do that's different from what all of our technology can do or whatever. So that's a brief aside there. Obviously, Captain America, the first Avenger, was set during World War II. And you know that it's going to be updated so that he's in the modern day. You already knew that going in, even if you didn't read the comic books, you know, because the goal is for them to all be in the same movie together.
Yep.
Now, I think it's truly remarkable because as we're looking forward to Infinity War at the beginning of May, like this is a different, a whole different level of they're all going to be together in the same movie. Like here you've had numerous other properties have started since, you know, Avengers kind of combined that core group, Captain America, Thor, Iron Man, Hulk, Hawkeye, and Black Widow.
Yeah.
And then obviously your Nick Fury, Maria Hill, some S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, etc. Loki was a standout character, more so in the Avengers even than in Thor.
Oh, yeah.
The first one. And now he's a superstar. Tom Hiddleston is a superstar because of this role, because of this, you know, this multi-franchise opportunity. So not that he's not talented, and he's done many other things aside from Loki since being Loki, but Loki put him on the international movie star map.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
And has continued to pay dividends for him, which is great because his interpretation of the character is one of the best on page or screen or anywhere else. It's fantastic. It's very watchable, very viewable. But now you've got Guardians of the Galaxy, you've got Doctor Strange, you've got Black Panther, you've got Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That was a huge deal, a huge negotiation for Disney and Sony to share that character. Nobody thought it was going to happen. Somehow they figured it out. There are rumors that they're still trying to do that with the X-Men properties.
That'd be great, but I'm
Fox
not gonna
hold has
my
a
breath.
You know, an iron grip on those. Like, wait a minute, no, we're gonna do this on our own.
Yeah.
Which lucky for them, the X-Men have like 8 billion characters that you can, you know, mix and match and pull from to do your own thing. But at some point, Wolverine, a version of Wolverine, is going to be in the MCU. There's just no doubt. Even if it's 30 years from now, and it's Hugh Jackman's grandson playing the character. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in the funny papers, they're all together. There is no division between those properties.
And then that kind of brings us to an interesting aspect of what happens in phase two, which by about 2014, you've had a lot of interesting interactions with certain characters and so forth, but then you get something that really kind of throws a wrench in the way most of these films have been perceived, and that's one of your, if not your favorite Captain America film, which is The Winter Soldier.
Such a good movie.
Which ultimately plays more like a Tom Clancy novel.
Absolutely.
Rather than an actual like Marvel property or a comic book. So this is the one that kind of comes in and adds a little bit more of the, not adult as in like dirty adult, but like the more grown up
mature
aspect.
Yeah.
There you go, of the comic book franchise.
Yeah, it's exceptionally mature storytelling for a superhero film. It's one of those things, and I know that every once in a while you'll come across a person who wasn't a super fan of the movie. Maybe people who like more colorful comic book character movies. This one had a lot of monochromatic kind of stuff going on. But The Winter Soldier is a great movie. Aside from being a great Captain America movie or a great superhero movie, obviously with the caveat that you have to have some knowledge going in. Like, what in the world is S.H.I.E.L.D.? Who is Captain America? Who is Bucky? You know, you do need to have some general awareness going in, but the way that it tilted the stage and changed, really, it changed your entire impression of the guiding organization behind the Avengers in the MCU. It's Nick Fury and his vision that brings the Avengers together.
Oh, yeah.
And he is the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. And in The Winter Soldier, S.H.I.E.L.D. becomes the bad guy. That people within S.H.I.E.L.D. have to fight other people within S.H.I.E.L.D. because there's some kind of a poison. There's a cancer inside that is eating away and changing the goals and using the tech and the intelligence for you know, maniacal purposes.
Yeah.
And it's not the, like, mustache-twisting, like,
yeah,
kind of maniacal. Yeah. Like, it's serious stuff, like real-world black ops, covert, CIA, you know, stuff that everybody is already worried about happening in the real world. And then you introduce that dynamic on the big stage of the MCU, and it had lasting ramifications that are still ongoing.
And, well, this is the film that introduced something else to the MCU, and that is the Russo brothers and their ability to create a substantial piece of work of art in the mainstream of what's going on in the MCU. I mean, you had Thor the Dark World, you had Iron Man 3, you had a lot of really great films, but then to take a property and say, okay, this is my vision and it'll fit because of this, and create a film that most people that we know that aren't really big Marvel fans will say, oh yeah, that's one of my favorite films. It's great. It totally reminds me of like Clear and Present Danger or some type of Jack Ryan, you know, piece. And so bringing in the ability like the Russo brothers can, and showing that they can, it can fit, actually set the stage for them bringing them in for other films like Civil War, Age of Ultron. You know, it just began to pour in that aspect of raising the age level, if you will, to who can actually enjoy this film.
Well, and I can remember when Winter Soldier was in post-production and getting ready to come out, and they did a number of interviews with the Russo brothers on television, radio, and, you know, digitally or in print. And it was the first time that I can really recall somebody pushing to define one of these films, any of them, any of the franchises, DC included. It was the first time that somebody really said, I'm going to define this film as more than a superhero film.
Yes.
They said, this is a superhero film that is a political thriller.
Oh, easily.
Like that was one of their talking points that they reiterated again and again and again and again. And then you've seen things, you know, take shape in similar ways. You know, Ant-Man. From the get-go, they said, Ant-Man is a superhero film that's also a fun heist movie, you know? Thor Ragnarok, the most recent entry in the MCU. Yeah, it's a superhero film that's also a bit of a, you know, like, buddy road trip movie.
Which works really well.
And it's such a great way of showing the versatility. I think a lot of people for a while had kind of a certain flavor, whether they considered it good or bad, they had a certain flavor of, this is what a comic book based movie is.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, unfortunately, Batman and Robin, Spider-Man 3, things happen and it changes your perception of the entire genre. But comic books as a medium have been in place for somewhere around 100 years. If not more. I'm sure somebody could fact check me and say, actually, the first comic book was written in 1608 or whatever. You know, like, fine, fact check me, that's fine. But they've been around for, you know, in mass publication terms, about a century. And I don't know how many thousands upon thousands of titles, millions of pieces of paper, billions probably pieces of paper with these serialized stories or even standalone. As a medium, it's covered every genre, every type of storytelling has shown up somewhere at some point. You know, biopics, there are comic books about that, you know, that are biopics, political thrillers, horror films, comedies, slapstick, you know, somber, emotionally sappy, you know, whatever, romance, all of it has happened.
Yeah.
In this medium. And a lot of it has happened specifically in the two big houses, Marvel and DC. Two big houses here in America. Obviously, there are other big houses in other markets. But Marvel and DC here in America, they've covered everything. They've had storylines, individual characters, individual moments and sequences stand out, you know, heroic or villainous turns that cover all of it. And so to introduce the broader world of pop culture, the world at large, if you will, to those nuances is strategic and it's brilliant. And it's the thing that has reinvigorated the entire genre. There was a lot of excitement in the media more than the, you know, the audiences, I think. But in the media, there was a lot of excitement about 5-6 years ago, wanting to know, like, oh, good, have these comic book movies finally jumped the shark? Have they finally overreached and people are getting tired of them and we can go back to great storytelling, right? And instead, what happened was, and I'm biased, but specifically in the MCU, what happened was the creators, the powers that be, the executives over Marvel Studios, Marvel Films that became Marvel Studios, and hopefully with the backing of Disney executives, but the Marvel team said, okay, then we need to make this better. The entire genre has to be better because we're still on the upward path. We're not even to a peak moment.
Yeah.
Yes, the Avengers combined all those characters into one movie, and that was thrilling and exciting, but the story was still in its infancy, the overall story of that universe. Now, as we're, you know, trucking toward May, you have your first, like, serious peak moment because people's contracts are finally for real over. And some of them may re-up and come back, or some of them may pop up as cameo appearances, you know, later on in future films. But all the Avengers, their performers are done after Avengers 4, which is the movie after Infinity War in 2019. So there's a very real chance that we won't see most or all of them again.
Yeah. And that kind of leads to the culmination of this thread that has been running through all of the films from Phase 1 through Phase 3, which we are currently in, and into, like you were saying, Infinity War and the next Avengers movie, which is the search for the Infinity Stones, which if you've watched the films, you know that there is this large hunt for these stones that have been... the story of these stones have been established in both Thor the Dark World and Guardians of the Galaxy. But the stones themselves don't really play a large role until you realize their destructive ability in Guardians of the Galaxy, and realizing that this is what these movies have pretty much been pushing towards kind of lends a little bit to the expectations of, well, what exactly can they do? And
sure.
I know that you and I have both been passing back and forth the Infinity Gauntlet story.
The omnibus.
The omnibus that we have.
1,200 pages or whatever it is.
And it's interesting how I didn't really know what all the gauntlet can do. I honestly thought it was just this really strong, you know, glove that could just punch a hole in the earth or something. I didn't really understand the full scope of its ability until I read that storyline, and then realizing that this glove could ultimately cease existence with a mere flick of a wrist. I mean,
The glove with the stones.
The glove with the stones, not by...
Not just the golden glove on its own. Come on, Eddie.
Of course. I bow to...
Well, that's one of the things that's great, because, you know, you've had these hints and winks and nods and elbows and nudges and whatever about individual elements that go into this gauntlet, the giant golden glove that we've seen a few different times now. But for the casual moviegoer who just enjoys these movies, you don't know what you're in for.
Oh, no.
Once Thanos, who's one of the big bads, like the big bads of the Marvel Universe in the comics... once that guy fully comes on the scene, because we've really barely met him, even to this day, he's had a few cameo moments, really. We've barely met him. We barely know what he alone is capable of doing. Plus, he has his honor guard of thugs and killers that are better than anybody else in the universe at thuggery and killing. And that's before you even get into the gauntlet, the stones, what it all does together.
Yeah.
The promise is Infinity War is going to have all of that. I mean, it's really it the potential, the story potential for this film is mind-blowing because it takes everything that you've seen, throws it all in a blender together, and amps it up from like maybe all of it together rates at like a 2, 2.5, and it's ramping it up to an 11.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's cool to see that all these films, starting from Phase 1, all the way back, like you said, a decade before, all the way back to 2008, seeing what these films have been building up towards for this moment in I'm assuming, which will be, you know, over the span of two films rather than just one, to see this opportunity where the ultimate power of the universe is in the hands of a madman, which Thanos is known as the Mad Titan.
The Mad Titan.
And so I'm anxious to see how that will transpire on screen and how they'll utilize this ultimate power being kind of utilized over the course of two films. Like, I don't know if it's going to be over two films or if it's just going to be all in the first film and the last film is just them recovering. I mean, who knows? But I'm excited to see what this has in store because of the fact that, going back to my first statement, I went and did the research. I actually got a chance to look at that kind of stuff and read the comics and read the storyline. But kind of looking forward to what this trailer has for us tomorrow. Or today, if you're listening to this.
Yeah, rest assured, if you're listening to this and the teaser trailer has already dropped, we have seen it. We happen to have recorded this episode before seeing it, but trust us, we've seen it a few times.
What is one of your expectations for the future of this franchise? What are, if you have more than one, what are maybe one or two of your expectations, your possible expectations for the future of what's to come for the MCU?
Well, the thing that really excites me, and this kind of kicked off our planning for this episode altogether, Vanity Fair, the holiday issue, the November-December issue of Vanity Fair, they just released a lot of photography and an entire, you know, cover story article online that is, it really is a beautiful deep dive into this decade of movie making with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And one of the things that really struck me in reading the article is, number one, Kevin Feige, who is the mastermind behind all of this, wasn't in the beginning, but is definitely now.
Oh, yeah.
He basically drops, well, we've made 22 movies and we've got 20 more in the hopper to various degrees of development. And they're all, you know, different. They all have their own flavor. There's been some conversation about having different time periods shown or different places shown. So you basically, even what we've seen to this point, the powers that be consider that to be a relatively controlled environment. You've had essentially, minus your Captain America, the First Avenger, which takes place in the 40s. But you've had roughly all in sequence, modern day time frame type of films. And you've seen Earth, Asgard, some places in space through Guardians of the Galaxy, and a very brief jaunt into like the astral plane,
yes,
in Doctor Strange. And there are so many more realms and places to go and discover from the comic universe.
Oh, yeah.
So there, I mean, the sky isn't even the limit. Something beyond the sky,
oh, yeah,
is the limit. And in their minds, they haven't even come close to reaching the limit of what they can show us, which, as a fan of the comics, I would concur. They haven't. I mean, the comics are continuing to do new things.
Oh, yeah.
And they're 80 years old, some of these characters. Nearly 80 years old. So if they can still do new things in print and in the comic medium, then the movies have a long way to go before they're tapped out. And the beautiful thing is the movies get to take what people love best about the print and slam it all together and recombine it in ways that you haven't seen before, even if you know how cool Planet Hulk was.
Truth.
What you see in Thor Ragnarok is different than Planet Hulk. It has a life and a vibrancy of its own. It respects the source material, but also presents it in a new way that, by and large, people seem to be finding appealing. I certainly did. I saw it 4 times.
Yeah.
So, and want to see it even more. Infinity War and whatever comes after Avengers 4,
yeah.
They haven't subtitled it anything because they don't want to give anything away. I mean, you've read the omnibus. I've read the stories many, many years ago. I'm rereading them now. But as you know, in that storyline, Thanos destroyed, like, ends half of the universe.
Oh, yeah.
It's gone. The characters are dead. The planets don't exist anymore. Whatever dimensions and realms, like, it's like a limitless empty.
Oh, yeah.
That happens in the blink of an eye as he's in control of the full power of this gauntlet with all the stones. They could very well take us in Infinity War and drop us hard in the end. And a lot of those heroes are fully dead, like fully, fully dead, gone, disappeared, whatever you call it. And it'll be up to them in the fourth one whether or not they succeed in getting them all back, or some of them, or some of them come back, but they're changed. You know, you could do a lot,
yeah.
With the storyline. Not to mention the fact that we know for Captain Marvel, which comes in 2019, excuse me, with Brie Larson in the lead role, that's now set in the 90s.
Yeah.
And a dominant force, antagonistic force, is an alien race called the Skrulls, which are shapeshifters. There was a whole, really intelligent summertime crossover thing done in the comics several years ago, 8 years ago or so, called Secret Invasion, mm-hmm. where some of the heroes that you thought had been normal the whole time were actually sleeper agents of these shapeshifter aliens and were not themselves at all. There's literally dozens, hundreds of story elements that could be brought in and recombined to great effect over the next, decade, the second decade of this universe.
Yeah. And I agree, honestly, with everything you had mentioned, because of the fact that this film franchise altogether is essentially reshaping the comic book aspect of these storylines. I mean, the resurrection, if you will, of the popularity of Iron Man is all due to Robert Downey Jr.'s portrayal as the character.
Absolutely.
And you look at a lot of other characters who are beginning to become more and more on the covers of large titled, Marvel comics, as well as other, franchises. The introduction to these characters into a cinematic universe is bringing about an age of, appreciation for what comics has always been, which is a form of literature and a medium of art that we used to digest weekly. So,
come on now.
Well, I mean, yes, still do.
Some of us still do.
But I'm excited to see where this storyline goes. Where it goes from here, honestly, is my biggest quandary, if you will, because like you were saying, there's a lot of actors that are, their contracts are coming up around this time after this film. And is the vision that, Tony Stark had in, Age of Ultron, is that something that he's looking forward to see in this film? Are we looking at a whole brand new set of Avengers to kind of take the stage? Who knows? But I know one thing is certain, and that is Marvel has yet to not deliver on their promise of big baddies and awesome storytelling when it comes to these larger films. So I'm excited to see that as the ship is steering right towards this iceberg, I'm ready to see some big fireworks. So.
Absolutely. I mean, we've already heard and some of us seen the bootleg video from Comic-Con of Thanos ripping half of a moon down onto a planet.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So hopefully when this teaser drops, well, it's already dropped for you faithful listeners, I'm sure, You know, hopefully that piece made it into the teaser so that those who don't really understand the power involved in this object, collection of objects under the control of a madman, that's a pretty good initial illustration of how destructive one could be. And really, that individual thing is nothing.
I had actually posted today when they announced that they were going to debut the trailer for Wednesday. I actually put, oh great, finally, now I can see the full trailer without having to turn my head and squint so slightly. So, you know, who knows if this is the trailer that they're going to debut from D23. Who knows if this is a whole new trailer. Either way, you know, it's clear that we're both really excited as to what's to come. And
by the way, that like teaser trailer announcement thing that went live on Tuesday, brilliant.
Oh yeah,
I sat there and watched that thing for a minute and 46 seconds.
I was actually excited because I actually saw a friend of mine who is in that trailer. So I was like, oh my gosh, I got on, you know, Facebook Messenger and I messaged her. I'm like, hey, I saw you and your husband, so that's cool. And she was like, I know, it's so freaking cool. So it was funny, but it was interesting. So,
well, there you go.
But let us know what you think of the trailer, when it debuts, when it drops, if you've seen it, have you seen it, have you not seen it, why haven't you seen it yet? You should go and see the trailer, and when you do, come back and drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or on our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. We're excited to see what the Avengers has in store and what the Marvel Cinematic Universe has in store, so we hope you are too, and we hope to see you next time. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
Class dismissed.